podcasting and a writing class? Considering the possibilities. Welcome to Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities, a multimodal project exploring podcasting as part of a writing class. You are listening to the full series, all 6 episodes in one sound file. I have abbreviated the introduction and conclusions to each text, removing repeated information, and put the episodes together in one text. This is for those who want to hear the whole thing in one sitting. If you want to listen to this episode by episode, or not in one sitting, I suggest you listen to each episode, which you can find at kairos.technorhetoric.net/16.2/praxis/Bowie. This is a 6-episode podcast series with an interconnected web text published in Kairos, a journal of rhetoric, technology, and pedagogy. A full transcript of each episode is available on the website. I am Dr. Jennifer L. Bowie, your host for this series and a senior usability research analyst for the Home Depot website. I am also a podcaster with a variety of podcasts, including Screen Space, a podcast about creating usable, accessible, effective, and efficient web, blog, and digital media design for the everyday and non-expert
designer. In this episode, I will first present the series, then introduce podcasting, discuss how it fits in a writing classroom, present the advantages, describe the studies I draw on throughout the text, and consider digital divide issues. Without further ado, let's begin episode 1, Introduction and Background. Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities, is a multimodal text with 2 main components, a hypertextual web text and the 6-episode podcast series. I encourage you to listen to the podcast and to explore the web text to experience the full article. This multimodal text is a companion to another multimodal text, Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, How Podcasting Fits into the Computers and Writing Classroom. In Rhetorical Roots, I address how podcasts may be used in classrooms to help students rethink the old writing concepts we have been teaching, such as audience, tone, purpose, and context, along with the 5 canons, in new ways, and consider how students may bring the lessons they learn from podcasting back into their print text writing. In this article, I focus on the practice of podcasts in our writing classes. I introduce the concept of podcasts and present a short definition of them and list some advantages to podcasts in episode 1, this episode. I also touch on digital divide and literacy issues. In episode 2, I present the 3 types of podcasts to consider incorporating into your writing classroom: teacher-produced podcasts, student-produced podcasts, and externally produced podcasts. In episode 3, I begin presenting possible podcast assignments. I provide some basic information on integrating these assignments and have students produce podcasts, and then present 3 response podcast assignments. In episode 4, I focus on 4 media and message assignments. I finish the possible assignments in episode 5, where I cover 2 genre-based assignments. I complete the article in episode 6 with a tip, information on resources, and a conclusion. In episodes 2 through 5, I have also included clips from student work as examples of what the students have done with podcasting.
Many podcasters provide ethos in the beginning part of the podcast by telling the listeners who they are. Following this trend, here is my background. I am Dr. Jennifer L. Bowie, a senior usability research analyst for the Home Depot website. Previously, I was an assistant professor at Georgia State University. Inside and outside the academy, I teach and research podcasting, digital media, writing, usability, and rhetoric. I've taught 8 classes with podcast components, from having podcast readings to a podcast-intensive senior seminar class. I'm also a podcaster with my own web and digital media design podcast called Screen Space, a pod poster series for the Association of Teachers of Technical Writing Conference in 2009, and a forthcoming, possibly already out by this point in time, triathlon, duathlon, and running couplecast with my husband. I have also presented various conferences on podcasting and have conducted research on podcasting, including classroom research, usability research, and interview research with some successful podcasters. This article is based on my experience as a podcaster and as a teacher and researcher of podcasting.
Now that I've introduced the article and myself, let's talk podcasting. Quote, podcasting is so much more than a technology. It is truly an art form. End quote. Rob Walsh and Maura Lafferty. First, I will define what a podcast is for those of my listeners who may not be familiar. Podcasts are episodic, digital media files distributed over the internet, usually through RSS feeds and collected by subscribers through RSS feed readers and podcatcher software, such as iTunes. Podcasts are designed to be subscribed to so that subscribers will receive the latest podcast episode when it is published or when their software is next scheduled to check. While podcasts can be a range of files, the most common are audio and video, and it is these two types I focus on in this article. Podcasting started out as a grassroots collaboration, and many of the early podcasters were passionate and non-commercial, podcasting for the love of technology and their topics. 6 years later, companies of all sizes, including Fortune 500 companies and many charities, have podcasts. As podcasts have become increasingly popular among the grassroots and businesses, those of us in computers and writing may be considering incorporating podcasts into our classes. Since podcasts are a greater departure from the typographic-based texts, such as web pages and blogs, we may already include in our classes, integration may be more problematic. Podcasts tend to be visual and or auditory texts with typographic-based text as support, such as transcripts or captions. The emphasis changes, but the writing and argument skills still hold true. The studies. Throughout this series, I will provide some empirical support for the podcast assignments. I draw on findings from two different studies. I conducted survey studies in my fall 2010 and in my fall 2008 senior seminar classes. In both cases, I am providing data from a survey given at the end of class. While the two surveys differ somewhat, and each I asked how various assignments and class components contributed to the students' understanding and applications of various skills and knowledge related to writing. In the 2008 study, I asked about skills and knowledge in 29 areas, and in the fall 2010 study, I asked about 19 areas. In both classes, the students were senior rhetoric and composition students at Georgia State University who were going to graduate that semester or the next. In my fall 2010 class, 10 of 14 students took the survey. My 2008 class, 9 of 10 students took the survey. For both studies, I received IRB approval, and I have collected digital versions of the surveys. I have included various tables of results on the relevant episode-related web text pages. Both studies are larger than just the surveys, and I'm only pulling a small amount of data from the surveys. I later plan to more fully analyze and present these studies. I offer the limited survey information as empirical support for my arguments in this podcast series. Advantages. There are several advantages to integrating podcasts into a writing classroom. Listed in no particular order. 1. Higher student achievements. Researchers Belinda Tynan and Stephen Colbran, and also Danny McKinney, Jennifer Dyke, and Elise Lubber found that podcasts can lead to higher student achievements. 2. Student support and enthusiasm. Students tend to like using podcasts as part of their learning, as found in 5 different studies, by Tynan and Colbran, by McKinney, Dyke, and Lubber, by Michael Huntsberger and Alan Stavinsky, and by Evans. 3. Time and location shifted. The anytime, anywhere option with podcasts is a strong advantage. This advantage is supported by findings from 2 studies, one by Evans and one by Huntsberger and Stavinsky. I've also had the students rave about the advantages of listening anytime, anywhere in my own classes. 4. Improved electronic writing and publishing skills. In the fall 2010 survey, I asked students how podcasting contributed to their understanding and application of several skills and knowledge related to class. Students either agreed or strongly agreed that podcasts contributed to their understanding and application of 15 skills, including audience, purpose, context, ethos, pathos, and logos. I'll provide a full list of these findings in the web text, so please check it out. 5. Costs. Podcasts are usually free, and Audacity, one of the better podcasting programs, is also free. If students have their own microphone, whether it be a USB microphone, an iPod, iPhone, or an MP3 player that can record, or a $1,000 recording setup with microphone and soundboard, then there do not need to be any additional costs. I'll discuss cost further shortly. 6. Learning through listening. According to Sabici and Teichel, learning through listening is more attractive and less tedious than reading, and it is a primary learning method for people from the beginning. They suggest it may motivate those who do not like reading, and it's a richer medium for understanding. As Manning states on page 2, quote, "What one hears through the speaker's intonation, dictation, and reflection conveys a richer understanding not only of the content, but of the speaker. Listeners connect to that voice and may feel less isolated," end quote. 7. Good knowledge distribution model. Podcasts are a good way to distribute information with subscriptions. With a subscription, the texts are automatically delivered directly to the students, so there's less information retrieval and searching time. Also, the files are easy to share. The copyright issues often associated with fair educational use are less of an issue too, as often these files are distributed free online for anyone interested. 8. Not lost in time. Podcasts also provide a more permanent record than just speaking and allow people to rewind and replay the text. Digital divide and technological literacy. When considering any technology in the classroom, it is important to also consider the digital divide and technological literacy issues. As our students may be on either side of the divide, we cannot and should not just add technology into a classroom without some considerations. Access to digital technology and technological literacy are two key components of the digital divide. While most college students have some access to technology, whether their own laptop or campus computer lab, the amount and ease of access are serious concerns. If students do not have a convenient access to technology, such as at home or even suitable campus lab hours, accessing podcasts, let alone creating them, can be problematic. Also, if students do not have an MP3 player or a phone that plays MP3s, some advantages of the podcast, such as the time and location shifted benefits, are lost. Even when students have MP3 players, some students do not have the technological literacy to know how to download the podcast onto their phone or MP3 player a single time, let alone set up a subscription. I have found students will tend to listen on their computer and read transcripts rather than learning how to download the files on a portable device. Thus, even access is not always enough, and additional information on how to access and download the podcast may be necessary. In addition, those on the less digital side of the digital divide likely have less technological literacy than their peers. Podcasts require a certain level of technological literacy to access and more to produce. However, integrating podcasts can, in some ways, advantage those on the less tech side of the divide. With podcasting, students may develop their technological literacy skills, which is especially helpful for those with lower literacy levels. Since the majority of my students do not have any experience producing podcasts, they start from a similar place. Granted, those with higher technological literacy in other areas may have some advantages, but I've had several students struggle with other technological components of my class and then shine with podcasting. In fact, I've had those on the low tech side of the divide even helping their peers on the other side of the divide. Some divide issues can be mitigated in similar ways to how we've mitigated our other digital divide issues since we've begun incorporating technology into our classrooms. Providing students with in-class workshop time with technology can help a great deal. Providing students with information on the other resources they have available, labs, training, and equipment, can also help. I always offer to loan out my USB headsets, which are good for recording and editing podcasts, to students who do not have a microphone and cannot utilize the lab equipment. I've also gotten a special technology grant from a group on campus in charge of the iTunes University Initiative, and was able to provide my students with an iPod for the semester. There may be initiatives like these on other campuses. Also, for students who simply do not have access to computers outside the classroom, one workaround for listening to podcasts is to burn the podcast onto a CD or DVD. According to the Consumer Electronics Association, 90% of households in the U.S. have CD players, and 84% have DVD players. The teachers could burn the CDs or DVDs, or their students could do this during their workshop time. On a related note, cost is another concern with the integration of podcasts into our classrooms. Money for technology is often a divide issue, and those on the less tech side often do not have the money to buy the technology. Luckily, podcasting is a fairly low-cost addition to class. Software is often a huge expense, but there is good free software. I use Audacity and recommend my PC students use it too. It is free, has a shallow learning curve for the basics, and is used by many podcasters. It's also available on Linux, PC, and Mac. Rob Walsh and Moore Lafferty also recommend it, stating on page 265, quote, "Audacity is the best and cheapest option," end quote. If the student owns or has access to a Mac, GarageBand is another free option that comes with Macs and is a decent program. As long as students have a computer or access to a computer, the only other piece of equipment they may need is a microphone. And I recommend USB microphones, which run about $25 and up. Many students already have microphones, some built into the laptops, and others bought them for gaming or chatting by voice. My school also loans out equipment, which some students took advantage of for the microphones. Between school borrowing, previous ownership, my microphone loans, and school labs, I have not had a student need to buy a microphone yet. So, while we should consider digital divide and technological literacy issues, we should not let these issues stop us from incorporating podcasts into our classrooms. There are plenty of ways to alleviate many of the issues with thoughtful planning, information on resources, and possibly loaning out equipment. Of course, incorporating podcasting will enable the students to develop a new technological literacy area, and thus may be helpful for students regardless of their literacy levels or location on either side of the divide. Thanks for listening to Episode 1, Introduction and Background in the Multimodal Text, Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. Episode 2, Podcast Types to Consider. In this episode, I will discuss the three types of podcasts that can be integrated into the writing classroom: teacher-produced podcasts, student-produced podcasts, and externally produced podcasts. Without further ado, let us begin Episode 2, Podcast Types to Consider. Podcast Types to Consider. Individuals with a passion for a topic, Fortune 500 companies, and nonprofits are not the only ones who can and should utilize podcasting. Podcasts can also be integrated into the classroom for myriad reasons and benefits. However, writing teachers must consider the types of podcasts they want to incorporate. Before I present possible assignments in episodes 3 through 5, I first define the various types of podcasts we may want to consider incorporating into our writing classrooms. Two types and subtypes are internally produced or classroom podcasts, and one type is externally produced. Teacher-produced podcasts. Much of the scholarship on podcasting focuses on teacher-produced podcasts, including studies by Belinda Tyann and Stephen Colburn, Danny McKinney, Jennifer Dyke, and Leslie Lubber, and also Stephen Krause. Teacher-produced podcasts can be divided into two types of classroom podcasts. The first one is Lecture in a Box. The most common type of podcast discussed in the literature of classroom and educational podcasting is the Lecture in a Box style. See, for instance, Tynan and Colbran. This is also a common type found on iTunes University. In a recent review of the main page of iTunes University, I found all of the class-based podcasts were podcasts of class lectures. The Lecture in a Box type of podcast is simply a recording of the lecture in a lecture-based class and often the whole class. Frequently, these are posted without any editing. In fact, there are programs designed specifically for this, such as ProfCast, which will include sounds along with the voice. Tynan and Colbrand found reduced attendance rates and that students considered the podcast lectures to be replacements for class. However, they also discovered that rarely do the professors see these podcasts as replacements, but as support for those who attend the class. This style is helpful for students who miss class, who want to have a copy of the lecture but don't want to be distracted during the lecture by taking notes, who want to review the lecture, and even for students who are thinking of taking the class. These podcasts may also be helpful for ESL students who may want to pause to look up words, which they can't do in a lecture. Tynan and Colbrand found that students thought this style of podcast helped with exam preparation and assisted learning. However, this style does not work well in classes that are not mostly lecture and may not match the pedagogies of many writing teachers. Discussion or workshop-based classes would not easily work if recorded for a podcast, and many writing classes have workshop and discussion components. Thus, for many of us, the lecture-in-a-box style podcast would not work well in our classroom structures or with our pedagogies. Teacher-produced podcasts. Not all teacher-produced podcasts are simply recordings of lectures. Teachers may produce a variety of podcast types for class that go beyond that. These podcasts should be designed specifically for a class and not podcasts that a teacher created for other audiences or other reasons. They may be supplemental material, support material, review material, smaller recordings of parts of lectures, or possibly even a major source of class readings. For example, if a professor was creating a textbook for the class, she could distribute this not in print form, but in podcast form. I have recorded a few key mini-lectures or presentations of material in my classes and podcast them for the students. I selected material I thought that the students may want to access in the future, such as a short lecture and demonstration I gave on how to use Audacity. This type of teacher-produced podcasts are also popular in the literature. For instance, Michael Huntsberger and Alan Stavisky provided optional and supplemental podcasts of reading overviews, and Chris Evans studied revision podcasts. In both these studies, the researchers found students were receptive to the styles of podcasts, and Evans found that students listened on the go, while Huntsberger and Stavisky found that students would listen to the same podcast repeatedly. Thus, drawing on these studies, it seems students take advantage of the anytime, anywhere aspect of the teacher-produced podcast to increase their learning opportunities. Stephen Krause presents one example of teacher-produced podcasts incorporated in his writing class. Since it was an online class, he opted to record himself giving the lectures for students to access instead of writing up notes or using another media. He included more information than simple lectures. This material was new to the students and not just a recording of lectures that had already occurred. He also created these podcasts to help develop community. His results from this were mixed. He was disappointed that some students did not listen to all or any of the files, but he found results promising too, because the students who did listen were enthusiastic and because the podcast helped build that connection between teacher and student. This example shows how teacher-produced podcasts can enrich a variety of class types, especially online classes, but also that podcasts are not a learning activity without flaws. Our next category, student-produced podcasts. Student-produced podcasts. The least common type of internal podcast I have found in the literature is student-produced podcasts. These would be any podcasts that students produce for the class, often as a class requirement in some way. These podcasts may be created by a single student, a group of students, or possibly even the whole class. These podcasts may, in some ways, relate to course content, like a review of the past week's material, or they may be on topics related to the class content, such as a rhetorical analysis of a speech. Lastly, they may not be clearly related to the content beyond perhaps the development of digital and rhetorical skills. For example, a podcast on a student-selected topic, such as local architecture for a writing class. The audience will generally contain the students and teacher, but like other writing assignments, could be external to the class, such as certain political groups, organizations, or niche audiences with special needs or interests. There are many possible assignment types for student-produced podcasts. I'll present some types I have tried in my classes in episodes 3 through 5. As teachers of writing, it is easy to see the advantages of student-produced podcasts over lecture in a box or other types of teacher-produced podcasts. Students often learn more from doing than just reading or listening. I have seen improvements in students' applications of the 5 canons of rhetoric, along with audience, tone, purpose, and context when they podcast, and they often carry these improvements to other types of composition. Some study findings presented in episodes 3 through 5 support these improvements. Here is a quick sample of snippets from a few student-produced podcasts in my class.
Welcome to the Red Arena Podcast. Rhetorical tips to keep you on your toes.
Hello, my name is Brett Jones. Today is Wednesday, November 19th, 2008, and you are listening to Progymnus Modcast, a podcast about discussing how ancient instruction of rhetoric can be applied to modern pedagogy to better prepare our students to become successful rhetorical citizens.
This is Angela Johnson, and welcome to my podcast and my capstone project, which seeks to evaluate the rhetorical arguments used in granting the last two stays of execution in the Troy Davis case.
Buenas tardes. Welcome to El Pilon. Have a seat in my kitchen while I get you some coffee and crackers. As a Puerto Rican, I find family, friends, culture, food, and love of the beautiful island all inextricable.
Welcome to my first podcast on Eclectic Bowl. If you've been following any of my recent posts, you know I've just returned from a 2-week trip overseas. I traveled so much during my life that packing and preparing for a trip almost seems as natural as loading the car up for a trip across town. Well, maybe it's a bit more complex than that. International travel can be pretty overwhelming if you've never done it before. So I decided to put together my top 10 traveling tips and tricks that I follow every time I make an international trip.
Externally produced podcasts. The last common type of podcast is what I call externally produced podcasts. These are podcasts that may be on a topic related to class, but are not produced by anyone in the class for the class. Thus, these are similar to the books, chapters, and articles that we have students read as class texts and textbooks. These could also be produced by the class professor, but not specifically for the class. For example, I have a web design podcast called Screen Space, and I occasionally have students listen to relevant episodes for part of their readings. As I did not create these podcasts for class, but as part of my own podcast series, they're externally produced and not teacher produced. Another externally produced podcast I like to use in my classes is Grammar Girl, a fun and short weekly grammar podcast, which I tend to require all of my undergraduate students to subscribe to and listen to for the duration of class. I've also required or suggested usability podcasts, technical communication podcasts, political argument podcasts, and podcast series of famous speeches such as Say It Plain, Great African American Oratory, Great Speeches in History podcast, and the speeches of President John F. Kennedy. These externally produced podcasts can be used not only for students to learn new material, but to analyze the genre of podcasts, discuss class-related subjects like tone, audience, and style, and compare and contrast various media. This type of podcast is rarely, if at all, discussed in the educational scholarship on podcasts, possibly because these are not frequently used, or because they are seen as too similar to the reading required for class and are overlooked by scholars. Including at least some of these externally produced podcasts makes sense in any class that includes the other types of podcasts, especially student-produced podcasts. These podcasts have the same advantages as teacher-produced podcasts. They are time and location-shifted learning opportunities and are a way students can do their readings while driving, running, doing chores, or in times or places in which reading could be hard. This expansion of learning time especially aids students who have a variety of other time commitments, such as jobs or a family. In addition, even just incorporating externally produced podcasts introduce some students to a new media and could aid in advancing their technical literacy. Also, as podcasts are generally free, This is a cheaper option than having students buy another book. Teachers can assign a single podcast episode on a topic, require a class to subscribe to the same podcast while in class, or have students subscribe to their choice of podcasts within a select group or genre. I had one class subscribe to a political podcast of their choice during the 2008 election. I provided a list of options, but allowed them to find other options, as long as they had them approved through me. I found the variety of podcasts led to fascinating class discussions, reading responses, and related assignments in a way that likely could not have been repeated had they all subscribed to the same podcast. The students also liked having the choice. I have discovered that including externally produced podcasts enriches my writing and rhetoric classes and provides a certain level of excitement that another print textbook does not. Used in conjunction with print and other digital texts, externally produced podcasts may work well as texts in a variety of writing classes. On the web text, I have included a list of externally produced podcasts that I have found work well as readings and as examples. To summarize, the first type of podcast is teacher-produced podcasts, which can be lecture-in-a-box podcasts where the teacher records the lecture, or they can be podcasts that the teacher develops specifically for the course. The next type is student-produced podcasts, which, like the teacher-produced podcasts, are internally produced. The students create these podcasts as part of the class to fulfill assignments, although it does not have to. The final category is externally produced podcasts, which are podcasts developed by podcasters outside of the class and for the purposes beyond being used in that class. These podcasts are much like textbooks. They are additional resources for the students. In fact, I often assign externally produced podcasts as readings for my students. While any of these types of podcasts may enrich the students' learning opportunities, of course, simply adding podcasts to the classroom does not guarantee any of these things. Teachers must integrate the podcasts in a pedagogically sound and thoughtful way and actively engage their students in these components in the same way that they do with others. Like any media, podcasts are not magical and don't instantly make our students smarter, more attentive, and better writers. However, when integrated in sound ways, podcasts can offer much to our classes. Thanks for listening to Episode 2, Podcast Types to Consider, in the Multimodal Text, Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities. Tune into Episode 3, Podcast Assignments 1, Response Assignments, where I present some rules for including podcast assignments and background on introducing podcasts into a writing class. I also present 3 response-based possible assignments.
Podcasting in a Writing Class, Considering the Possibilities, Episode 3, Podcast Assignments, Response Assignments. In this episode, I will first present some guidelines I have developed for integrating podcasts and provide 3 response-based podcast assignments. Without further ado, let's begin Episode 3, Podcast Assignments 1, Response Assignments. Possible podcast assignments. Like any media, there are a large number of possible podcast projects for writing students. In these next 3 episodes, I present some project ideas that should work in a variety of writing classes. Many of these assignments I have taught, and I will provide information on incorporating them, along with tips and pointers, on making these assignments work. In this episode, I will focus on response assignments. In Episode 4, the next episode, I will discuss media and message podcast assignments. I end the assignment discussion in Episode 5, where I cover genre assignments. First, I will share some guidelines I've developed concerning podcast assignments. The first one is length and time. Like any digital project, podcasts tend to take students more time than simply writing a paper. When I replace a paper project with a podcast, I keep in mind the extra time it will take my students to record and edit. My general rule of thumb is pages to minutes. If a paper project was 10 double-spaced pages originally, then I consider the podcast equivalent to be 10 minutes. Since most people tend to read faster than a person talks, This will mean the podcast will have less verbal or textual information in it. So if this is an issue, do adjust accordingly. For more casual assignments, which will take less editing time generally, you could extend the podcast time more since you don't expect them to edit as much. In my own recordings, I found a page of text comprising of 12-point typeface, usually Georgia for me, and single-spacing text takes approximately 3 minutes of podcast time. This, of course, varies depending on content speed and additional things like music, but it gives you an idea of what to expect. The second guideline area is transcripts. For any formal assignment, I require students to submit transcripts of the podcast. My primary reason for this is accessibility. While audio podcasts will work well for audience members with issues seeing, they will not work well for audience members who have hearing problems. Much of the accessibility programs out there for digital texts are designed to work with typographic-based texts, like websites and blogs, and not audio-based texts, like podcasts. Thus, I require my students to submit transcripts with their podcasts. The transcripts can then be read by those with hearing problems, thus the podcast should be accessible for those with visual or auditory problems. In fact, an audio podcast with a digital typographic-based transcript may be more accessible than a website and will be accessible for a wider range of listeners/readers. Requiring transcripts for accessibility brings awareness to the issue. The transcripts also give me a place to comment or follow along when grading, which can be helpful. Usually students write out transcripts before they start recording the more formal assignments anyway, so it is often little extra work for them to submit these along with the podcasts. For less formal assignments, like their reading responses, I do not require transcripts because the assignments are too small. Asking for transcripts would just take more time. However, I do ask they include transcripts if they have them, since some students still do write out these more casual assignments. And the third area is editing. The level of sound editing I require depends on the assignment. For shorter and less formal assignments, like reading responses, I require minimal editing. I mostly just want an understandable podcast where the major issues are edited out. For larger and more formal assignments, I expect a higher level of editing and sound quality in general. If the podcast is their final project, I expect it to be clean of any sound issues, easy to hear, and have well-balanced sound levels. I will mention my preferred sound editing levels for some assignments I discuss throughout the next few episodes. Those are my three guidelines. Now let's start discussing some assignments, response assignments. Reading Response Podcast. In many of my classes, students are assigned once or twice weekly reading responses. In my senior seminar and in some graduate classes, students have the option to complete these in written or podcast form, often with a requirement for a certain number in podcast form. In my senior seminar, I require 3. For many, the podcasts take more time than simply writing their responses out, so I make the assignment short and casual. Their podcasts do not have to be highly sound edited, and they should be short, 2 to 5 minutes for my undergrads. I do not require scripts for these podcasts. As a teacher, I enjoy listening to these podcasts as I get a better idea, often from their voices and tone, how students are reacting to the readings. I also get to hear them wrangling with ideas in ways I just don't see in their written responses. Plus, students want to make sure they do the readings for their podcast reading responses, as they don't want to sound stupid. One primary goal for this assignment is technological literacy, particularly podcast literacy. While students can choose when in the semester they do their podcast reading responses, I recommend they do one, at least, in the first few weeks of class to try out podcasting on a low-risk assignment. If they do this, then they do not have to figure out how to podcast while doing an assignment that is worth more. I have had many students thank me for this recommendation, and I've even considered requiring it. I kind of hate requiring something like that, so I haven't yet. Other goals for this assignment include increasing the students' ability to critique, analyze, communicate orally, and analyze their audiences. A key purpose of the assignment is community building, and hearing their peers on their MP3 players does seem to develop community excitement in my classes. They'll often talk to each other before and after classes about what they were podcasting. It's pretty neat to see. I put a sample assignment description for both my regular reading response and my podcast reading responses in the web text. In my fall 2010 class, students found the podcast reading responses overall contributed to their electronic writing and publishing skills, giving the reading responses a 4.2 of 5. Students found that the podcast reading responses particularly increased their understanding and application of audience and technological literacy, which makes sense since these are often the first podcasts they do in my class and because they're creating them for their peers. 8 other areas received a 4 or higher by the students, including purpose, media use and differences, oral communication, and ethos. I put a table up on the web text for this episode with the 19 areas and the ratings students gave each. I've included some clips of student reading responses so you can hear what students have done.
Today on this podcast, I'm going to discuss Lannan and what the book has to say about oral presentations. Clearly, our class has been a great example for what to do and what not to do in oral presentations. Some of us like to just jump off the deep end. Some of us like to stay on the straight and narrow.
Hi, this is Robert Manfredi's third podcast for Senior Seminar Fall Semester 2008. The topic of the show today is the 5 canons of Egyptian rhetoric. Stay tuned afterwards for another track for Morning State. So here we go. First of all, what does the word canon mean? Canon means the body of rules, principles, or standards accepted as axiomatic and universally binding in a field of study. So, holding to the definition, we can conclude that a canon of anything is pretty damn important, or rather, the most important part of a thing.
Anyway, I am responding to Heinrich's chapter 23, because God love him, he is pretty funny. I wish he was in our class. Wouldn't that be awesome? Wow. So the chapter begins out with Ralph Waldo Emerson's little quote there, which kind of makes me feel like a Power Ranger of rhetoric. Yeah, that's all I got to say about that.
The second time reading through Buck's article, I saw some very important and pertinent points about the relationship between the speaker and the reader. For me, I always saw discourse as something constructive, always a synthesis of ideas, but Buck's notion that speaking and discourse is a purely selfish and self-centered exercise also seemed to ring true, giving some thought. And that gave to the realization that I never really thought about the notion of discourse before this point.
Gloria Steinem was obviously a female force to be reckoned with for her ability to call a spade a spade, something the media a lot of times is unwilling to do. I believe her sexist assignments in her work as a, quote, girl reporter helped launch her career into female activism. She was obviously a woman of principles who believed in standing up for what she believed in, even at the cost of losing her magazine for refusing advertising that sought to muffle her voice. I appreciate Steinem's rhetorical strategy of changing perspectives. I think that's something that all rhetoric should seek to do.
Peer review. Peer review of writing is always a tricky topic. Many students do not value their peer reviews, thinking their peers do not know much about writing. However, peers often have valuable advice to impart, and the review can be helpful. In addition, writing research conducted by David Bartholomew and others has shown that reading aloud one's writing often helps a writer see or hear what needs to be fixed. For instance, John Hedgecock and Natalie Lefkowitz on page 258 point out that hearing their text allows students to see it in a new way, leads to better analysis, and aids in the construction of an internal representation of the text. This idea for podcast peer review combines both concepts. In the peer review, the reviewer will read the peer's work on the podcast, commenting on it as she or he reads it. This way, the writer will not only hear his or her reading out loud, but they'll also hear the enthusiasm or the confusion of the reviewer, hear where she or he stumbles, and hear what works and does not work. This should make the review more legitimate in the writer's mind and more helpful. In addition, this will give the writer a copy of the review, which is not available in a face-to-face review. Having the podcast to refer to is especially helpful for ESL students or those with memory or process learning issues. The podcast peer reviews have been quite helpful in my classes so far from a teacher perspective. However, like other types of peer review, it generally seems like the strongest students tend to give the best feedback and are more willing to value the peer review, especially when done by another strong student. I had students do peer reviews of each other's senior seminar projects, which could be in a variety of media, print, web, podcast, and more. This made the podcast peer reviews fascinating. One strong peer review of a podcast played the podcast during the review and then would pause or talk over the podcast, much like the director's commentary on a DVD. In fact, the student told me that was his idea. He was watching a DVD and got this idea for it. This immediate feedback to the podcast was very helpful to the podcaster. And I actually provide this peer review as an example at the end of the section if you want to hear what happened. One student reviewed a website and provided the instantaneous response on opening the page, including a rather confused tone, which gave the website designer an additional level of feedback. The students who reviewed written or print text read them aloud in the review, and their stumbling, confusion, and praise of the actual writing seemed helpful. Like they would read a sentence and say, I have no idea, or wow, that was really well written, something like that. One downside to these reviews, however, is that they tended to be very time intensive. The students who did a great job spent far longer on their podcast peer reviews than on a written peer review. While some students seem to enjoy it and get more out of it, the extra time may be spent on additional print peer reviews or other things in the limited time of any writing class and semester. In my fall 2008 senior seminar survey, I asked how the podcast peer reviews contributed to their understanding and skills in 29 areas. Students rated the skills on a 1-3 scale, with 3 denoting significant contributions, 2 moderate contributions, and 1 little to no contribution. 26 areas received a 2 or higher average for the podcast peer critique. For their overall applied rhetorical skills, students rated the podcast peer reviews as a 2.3, and 10 other skills earned scores over this. Students rated the podcast peer critiques as contributing the most to their written communication and their technological skills. Other skills that received above a 2.3 include analysis, critique, tone, delivery, and invention. Since peer reviews are rather private, I've only included one example, which I received explicit permission from the reviewer and the original author to use. I included the assignment description for this example in the web text.
The transition here is really good, and I know you had some
and now on to our podcast
advice about
the
correlation between dance and rhetoric, but I think it works here, especially given that it's going to be a series, and I'm assuming that you're going to tie these elements at the end.
As a guide, I will be referencing Sharon Crowley and Deborah Haughey's book, Ancient Rhetorics for
Excellent
Contemporary
citation.
Students,
no plagiarism here.
As well
good job.
As an enjoyable read. Today's focus is rhetoric. What is it? Where did it come from? And how do I use it today?
That's very
rhetoric
good to draw your audience in with all these questions.
During most of its modern life, often mislabeled as empty
it's really
words
helpful.
Or fancy language used to distort the truth or tell lies, rhetoric's status in the public eye is not generous. However, rhetoric
nice
allows people to make important
there.
Choices without resorting to less palatable means of persuasion.
Teacher feedback. One of the most helpful podcasts for students was not a student-produced podcast, but a private teacher-produced podcast, Teacher Feedback to Student Work. In several classes, I have provided feedback in podcast, or really just audio, form, and the students loved them. They enjoyed hearing my reactions to work and valued this more than a written comment. In addition, they were much more likely to listen to all of my comments, especially since the grade was at the end. In fact, I had students suggest I put the grades first, so they would not have to wait through the whole comment to find out the grade. Some students even reported that the feedback in podcast form made it easier for them to revise and improve their writing. For privacy reasons, I'm not including any examples here, but these are likely pretty easy for you to envision. Audio feedback for students is not a new concept. Teachers have been giving students audio feedback from the beginning of teaching. In fact, it was our first form of feedback. Technology, like tape recorders and Norton Connect, have enabled teachers to record feedback and students to listen to it multiple times at their convenience. For instance, Chris Anston discusses the use of tape recording student papers in 1997. Anston, on page 106, notes that when he's recording comments, he feels a social dimension in narrative, more personal quality to his comments. The recording also allowed him to loop back to earlier comments, explain greater details, refer to class, and show his own reading process. He discovered that students preferred the taped commentary, and as a result, evaluated his teaching more highly. Richard Beach and Tom Friedrich, on 226, state that oral feedback allows for a descriptive, reader-based feedback, where the readers can discuss how they're responding to the student text. Teachers can more easily express feelings, such as feelings of being underwhelmed, overwhelmed, moved, puzzled, and they can also discuss what they expect or predict will happen in the student's text. However, as Lowell Kim points out, students can be discouraged by the sounds of disappointment, lack of encouraging tones, and even feelings that the teacher sounded mean. They also found the comments could be long, unclear, and disorienting. And this concludes Episode 3, Podcast Assignments, Response Assignments. Thanks for listening. Do check out Episodes 4 and 5 to learn more about podcast assignments. In 4, I will discuss media and message assignments, and in 5, I will delve into 2 genre assignments. Podcasting in a writing class? Considering the possibilities. Episode 4, Podcast Assignments 2, Media and Message Assignments. In this episode, I present 4 possible podcast assignments that focus on media and message concerns. The Week in Review, Media and Message Comparison, Option from a List of Various Media, and Regular Individual Podcast Series. I have included many clips from student work as examples. Without further ado, let us begin Episode 4, Podcast Assignments 2, Media and Message Assignments. Week in Review. My favorite podcast assignment is the Week in Review podcast, as I've received some of the strongest student podcasts as a response to this assignment. Students in my senior seminar and in my undergraduate electronic writing and publishing classes have completed this project, and I plan to incorporate it into future classes. Depending on size and length, I recommend having this be a smaller team collaboration. 2 students worked well for me. Since my classes tend to have limited lecture time and are mostly discussion, a lecture in a box, podcast of the actual class would be hard. So instead, the students produced weekly review podcasts, which they posted on iTunes University. Each team was responsible for covering 1 week of class. In these reviews, they provide a summary of the content of the class, a reflection on the material covered, including the readings, key points for the week, thoughts on what they learned and what they plan to do with it, and additional resources relevant to the topic. In my senior seminar, they designed the assignment as a class. They also chose to require both students to speak on the podcast, a relevant quote, and some connection from the material covered that week to something outside the class. They also set the time to be approximately 15 minutes with a range of plus or minus 2.5 minutes. Other than these requirements, I allowed students to design the podcast however they want, choose their own PodSafe music, which is music with correct permissions to be used in podcasts, album art, arrangement, and so on. If due to class length or number of students, there are weeks not covered by students, the teacher could cover the remaining weeks. This would be a way to connect with the students and even could work to decenter the classroom, as some student-produced Week in Review podcasts may be stronger or at least more interesting to the audience, the students, than what the teachers produce. My main goal for this assignment is community building and collaborative knowledge development. Since the class is the audience for these, I encourage students to use the Week in Review podcast to connect the material to their classmates. While the assignment focuses on providing information, students also use these as a way to entertain their peers, providing music they like, odd accents, jokes, nicknames, and more. I also like to encourage them to draw on the discussions of the week and students will often quote each other's reading responses, tweets, and comments made in class. The students become responsible for their peers' understanding of what was covered that week, and they find unique ways to make the knowledge more applicable and interesting. In addition, I encourage students to develop their understanding and applications of ethos, tone, style, summary, analysis, and critique through this project. In the associated web text, I provided a sample assignment description. In my classes, these Week in Review podcasts are often considered medium-sized projects. They take much more time than the reading responses in smaller projects, but do not take the effort I would expect for a final project. In advanced classes, these projects are nice because the students need minimal additional training, beyond training on how to do a podcast, so I can start assigning them within a few weeks of the start of class. Empirically, students find this podcast assignment to aid in their development of knowledge and skills. Overall, students thought the Week in Review contributed to their understanding and application of electronic writing and publishing, giving it a 4.3 of 5. Of the remaining 18 knowledge and skills, the average student scores were 4 or higher for 13 of them, including audience, purpose, tone, context, critique, and analysis. I will put a table with this information up on the web text page for this episode, so you can see how all 19 skills were rated. I've included a few clips from some of the Week in Review podcasts my students have completed.
I'm Robert Manfredi, and today we will discuss some riveting topics, including copyright issues, persuasive proposals, the ancient Greek idea called Kairos, and the great Martin Luther King Jr.
Now to synthesize all we know about pathos and proof, Brian and I are going to analyze a vice presidential debate between Governor Sarah Palin and Senator Joe Biden to see what pathos and proofs they used during the debate. I will start with Joe Biden. I found Mr. Biden had a nice infusion of pathos and proof on his side of the debate, and that drew the audience in because much as he was using proof, there was every example that he gave had a tinge of pathos that certainly made the audience aware of his words and aware of what he wanted to do for the average American.
For Monday's class, we covered our grammar tip of the day on commas, a PowerPoint presentation on writing an academic article, and focused on the Aspasia and Logan readings. First, let's start off with the grammar tip, the reason for which was because of the prevalence of serial commas in our recent writing assignments. Not to be confused with the breakfast food, the serial comma occurs frequently in lists. Here are the rules that Dr. Poey defined for us to follow.
Well, if I don't mind, I'll just step up and be your special guest for the podcast.
What? You aren't even in those classes. You're just a deckhand. You aren't even on our roster.
Yeah, I recollect I was mopping the deck during those classes there, too.
Well, if you recollect it so well, tell me what that gentleman talked about when Captain Dr. Jabo asked him to give a review about his Reading Response podcast on October 6th.
I believe he said something about his 14-year-old sister preparing a rhetorical argument for her mother to allow her a cell phone. Arrgh, I remember she gave some good reasons, too. Pathetically appealing to her mother by telling her she would be safer with a phone. He said, arrangement is inherent in humans, like grammar. Even if we don't know the nomenclature of the process.
Yes, that's right. I do remember that gentleman saying that. Tell me, what did Captain Dr. Jabo say about that?
She said, and I quote, Brian's point is very good.
Media and message comparison. For this assignment, which is particularly good in writing classes where genre and media are studied, students compose a short paper and a short podcast about the same topic. It would be possible to include options of other media, a blog post, a web page, whatever else would fit. In my senior seminar, they did two arguments, one in podcast form and the other in a short print paper form. I also required a reflection, which they could either do on paper or as a podcast, or whatever media they did the other two parts in, depending on the class. Where students compare how the two texts are different, including what they did differently and how they considered things like audience, purpose, context, tone, and ethos. With this assignment, my students considered differences in genre, media, and the rhetorical techniques for the various media, audiences, genre, and so on. Interestingly, many students thought their written arguments was stronger, mostly because they've been writing arguments for at least all of their college education. However, in almost every case, the podcast assignment received higher grades and more effectively responded to the assignment. The assignment is included on the accompanying web text, so feel free to check that out. While this shocked many of them, it also led them to think about what made arguments work and how a written argument for a teacher may not be as persuasive as a podcast with music and accents for an audience of peers. My purpose with this assignment is to prompt the students into thinking about how to write or argue in different media. For my rhetoric students, this assignment draws heavily on the ancient rhetorical tradition, allowing them to fully apply the canon and oral argument techniques. By also doing a written argument, I hope students will consider how these rhetorical techniques change with paper arguments, and possibly how rhetoric changed as argument became print. In classes where I have opened this up to other media, I challenge them to analyze how their selected media impacts and can even make the message. With this assignment, I foster media analysis and critical and reflective analysis. I found the assignment draws heavily on students' invention, style, and audience analysis skill. This assignment could be a medium to large size project. I tend to make it a medium sized project and require it around the mid-semester point, after students have covered many of the necessary rhetorical concepts and are ready to try them out. As a medium sized project, I require 2 to 4 single space pages for the print argument and approximately 5 minutes for the podcast. For the reflection, I ask for 1 to 2 pages, single spaced, or 2 to 4 minutes in podcast form. I put the assignment description for the podcast and paper media analysis project on the web text, but feel free to open this up to any media. I found this assignment to be highly successful. In my 2008 study of podcasts in a writing classroom, students found that the media analysis project contributed to 25 of the 29 skills. The students gave this assignment a 2.8 of 3 for overall applied rhetorical skills and rated 10 other skills above a 2.5, including written communication skills, arrangement, ethos, logos, critical thinking, analysis, and style. And I'll put this up on the web text so you can see all the scores. Options from a list of various media. In classes where I teach several media and genres, I may allow students to select their media for a project from a list. In my undergraduate electronic writing and publishing class, they can choose from one of many different types of media writing we cover for focus projects, including blogs, online help, e-journals, and podcasts, and either do a detailed analysis of the media and/or work within the media. In other classes, such as my senior seminar and my graduate electronic writing and publishing class, they can choose to do their final projects in podcast form. The result is often a creative use of the media. One of my senior seminar students, Ashley Judge, a professional ballerina, did the Red Arena podcast series for her capstone project, with several episodes focusing on various rhetorical concepts such as ethos, logos, and pathos. Another student, Brent Jones, created a 32-minute podcast argument for Progemus Moda and the U.S. educational system called a Progemus Modcast. Another student did a podcast analyzing the rhetoric in the last 2 stages of execution for convicted Georgian Troy Davis, including interviews with one of the authorities on the case and with an Amnesty International abolition coordinator involved with the case. Graduate student mid-semester and final papers have included a look at blogging and education, a discussion of gaming and literature, a study of the past and future relationship of electronic print and publishing, a podcast book review, a discussion of the fear of changing textual dynamics and hypertext, and an analysis of the design of St. Martin websites. I found that these projects are often interesting and use the media in ways that support and further their arguments and work. I've included a few clips from my graduate classes to further illustrate the range of work. This project idea is very flexible and can fit myriad instructor pedagogies, purposes, and goals. My goals vary depending on the class. In my undergraduate electronic writing and publishing class, I make this a medium-sized project, with the main goals technological literacy and media writing skills. In my graduate classes and senior seminar, I allow the students to select media that fit their ideas for the project, thus focusing on genre, media selection, purpose, and audience. However, the range of possibilities for this project is vast. And I invite other teachers to adopt this assignment in ways that best fit their own pedagogy's purposes and goals. I've included two different projects on the web text where students were given a choice of media. One of these was the capstone project for my senior seminar, a very large and weightly project. The other is a smaller project in my electronic writing and publishing class. For this project, students were given a limited choice of three media, podcast, blog, or wiki. These projects have proven to be successful in my classes. In my fall 2010 senior seminar class, students were given the option to select their own media for the capstone project. For those who selected podcasts, they rated this project as contributing at least a 4 of 5 to their knowledge and skills in 15 areas. Students also gave 10 of these areas a 4.5 or above, including their overall electronic writing and publishing skills. Other skill areas that students rated high include oral communication, critique, analysis, tone, logos, and purpose. For those who did not select podcasts, they did not rate their projects as contributing as strongly to as many skills. In my survey, I did not inquire about each media type, only podcasts and non-podcasts. Students rated the non-podcast capstones as contributing at least a 4 or 5 to their knowledge and skills in 13 areas. This is 2 less areas than students rated the podcasts as contributing to. There were only 2 areas where students rated the non-podcast capstones as contributing a 4.5 or above: their overall electronic writing publishing skills and critique and analysis. This compares rather poorly to the 10 areas students found podcasts to contribute to. Thus, it seems that these students' own ratings suggest that podcasts can lead to a richer learning experience than other media, and supporting my own arguments here and in the companion article, Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, How Podcasting Fits into the Computers and Writing Classroom. It's beyond the scope of this article to examine this in more detail here, but I suggest this investigation as future work for our field. Here are some clips of what students have done.
Here Comes Everybody is Clay Shirky's latest book about what happens when people are given the tools to do things together without needing traditional organizational structures. Published by Penguin in 2008, the 344-page book is categorized under business and technology, a classification which may seem strange when considering a book seemingly focused on the power of mass social efforts, but is actually tremendously apt because of Shirky's focus on decentralized power in relation to management hierarchies in business.
Hello, and welcome to the first episode in a short series of podcasts devoted to studying the past and future relationship between electronic and physical printing, in what I'm going to call the Internet versus Printing. My name is Austin Serkin, and I'll be your host for these podcasts. I'm a graduate student at Georgia State University in the Lit Studies program, and I have a vested interest in the future of publishing because I'm an aspiring science fiction writer.
Hi there, welcome to Storyflex. I'm Leanne Lemaster. A trend in publishing these days is to examine narratives from a different perspective. Geraldine Brooks' Pulitzer Prize-winning novel, March, is a retelling of the beloved classic Little Women from the point of view of Mr. March, the absent father who goes off to war.
This technological advance has allowed a countless number of individuals to get their messages out conveniently and easy. If used correctly, the podcast could also be used as a pedagogical tool. It would allow students to be refreshed on lectures or notes that they missed in class from the convenience of their room, car, or even on their morning jog.
No such things as ghosts in the machine. Relieving the fear of changing textual dynamics in hypermedia. This is Matt Donald. In his book Writing Space, J. David Bolter insists, quote, "The balance between the author and reader has shifted," end quote, in his assertion that through hypermedia, the equilibrium of control has swung considerably from author to reader.
Regular individual podcast series and classes with a strong focus on podcasts. A regular student-produced podcast series may work well. This topic could be related to class, such as a regular reading reviews, a discussion of their writing process throughout the semester, or a podcast on the class topic. The topic could also be students selected on an interest, career path, community service of some type, say a podcast for a local charity, or something else. Regardless, a focus on what makes a podcast serious and how to develop consistency, audience interest, and topics could be the academic focus of the project. I've not had a chance to try this assignment, but I hope to try it in a future class. So do consider these four media and message projects: week in review, media and message comparison, option from a list of various media, and regular individual podcast series. This concludes episode 4, podcast assignments 2, media and message assignments. Thanks for listening. Do check out episodes 3 and 5 to learn more about podcast assignments. In 3, I provide guidelines for teaching podcasts and present 3 response podcast assignments. In 5, I delve into 2 genre assignments. These are all, of course, part of the multimodal text, Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. Episode 5, Podcast Assignments 3, Genre Assignments. Genre is an interesting topic in the study of digital media, especially as many media, old and new, remediate other media. In this episode, I'll first present some genres that have successfully been carried over from other media to podcast form. I then present 2 genre podcast assignments. Without further ado, let us begin episode 5, podcast assignments 3, genre assignments. Genres transferred to podcasts. Outside the classroom, podcasts have been successful in several genres, many of which can be easily brought into the writing classroom. Education and information. Grammar Girl's podcast is a great example of this. Mignon Fogarty, Grammar Girl, has been quite successful with her podcast, starting the whole Quick and Dirty Tips podcast network. Her grammar podcast has ranked as high as number 2 on iTunes. Due to her success, she has now written 2 Grammar Girl books. Get It Done Guy, another podcaster in her network, also has a successful print book as a result of the success of his podcast on the network. Written Word. Written word podcasts, like fiction books and short stories, have also proven popular. Scott Sigler, a science fiction horror author, was the first to podcast a book and then use the audience and hype to get publishing contracts with print publishers. He is now a New York Times best-selling author and continues to publish in both print and podcast form. Another example is Escape Pod, a science fiction short story weekly podcast magazine, which now has one of the largest science fiction magazine audiences. While science fiction may not fit many of our writing classes per se, this does show that writing can be successfully podcast, and this may be useful especially for texts like The Fables and The Narrative and the traditional Progemus Mata. Instructions, how-tos, and tutorials. Podcasts that teach the audience how to do something while listening or viewing the podcast continue to be popular. Often these work better as video podcasts, so people can learn by watching. But audio can work well in some situations, such as learning a foreign language. One podcast I often recommend my students is a podcast on how to podcast. This podcast is called Making of a Podcast and is episode 70 in the Virgin Worlds podcast, a podcast series normally about gaming. I have linked to this in the transcript and the website. As long as the material can be understood orally or both visually and orally for video podcasts, podcasts can make good tutorials, how-tos, and instructions. Interviews. Walsh and Lafferty on page 63 state that, quote, "the interview cast can be one of the most interesting podcasts out there," end quote. The 5 interview cast examples Walsh and Lafferty discuss include interviews with podcasters, famous people, the audience, and everyday people. Seal Press was doing a series of interview podcasts with their authors, creating interest in the books while taking the books further. Issues. There are many popular podcasts on various issues and topics like politics, sports, news, religion, and GBLT issues. While each of these could be its own genre, and authors like Walsh and Lafferty list these as separate genres, they are similar enough in practice and as they could relate to our writing classes, so I've grouped them together in this larger category. These podcasts often combine opinion with facts and argument, much like many of the arguments we have our students write. Slate Magazine, for example, has several associated podcasts, including ones that cover politics, sports, and culture. Speeches and oral presentations. Arguably, most audio podcasts are oral presentations, and some podcasts are actually speeches. There are podcasts of many speeches and presentations that were recorded and later turned into podcast form. These include TED Talks, President Kennedy's speeches, and African American oratory. While not developed only for podcast form, these podcast speeches can be useful in the classroom as examples. Many of the previous mentioned issue podcasts are original speeches and oral presentations of the material also, so you could throw them into this category if you wanted to. Tech. Since podcasters obviously have some technological literacy, and podcast listeners, especially in the early days, had some technological literacy, many successful podcasts have been done on technology. In fact, Walsh and Lafferty state on page 90 that tech podcasts are one of the most popular genres. These include technology-specific tutorials, help, and news. Social media is one area that has received a lot of podcast attention lately. These podcasts may be helpful sources for classes that cover social media, as they can provide timely information from experts in an area that is quickly evolving. I'll link to a few social media podcasts I listen to on the resource page with the recommended podcasts. These genres are both a good starting place for exploration of externally produced podcasts and possibilities for student-produced podcasts. Now, let's discuss two possible student-produced podcast genre assignments. New approaches to old genres. Students often rethink the classic rhetorical canon and writing concerns when podcasting, so why not have them rethink those old genres too? What would a podcast research paper look like or sound like? How would a podcast user manual work? Podcast instructions? How effective would podcast progress reports be? Podcast memos? Podcast executive summaries? By allowing or requiring students to turn these genres into podcasts, students will not only have to understand the genre, but a new media and how the two could and should work together. This is another assignment that I have not yet had a chance to explore much, although some of my graduate students have taken on the challenge with their projects. As mentioned in episode 4, one graduate student has done a podcast book review, which was very interesting. Many of my graduate students have begun playing with what a seminar paper would look like or sound like in podcast form, and several have attempted this new approach to a well-established print-based genre. We've had many class discussions about what differences may be necessary or desired. For instance, how does one site work in a podcast? Saying parenthetical references is awkward and listening to them is not fun. So we've discussed how to present this information in mouth and ear-friendly ways, drawing heavily from my own work podcasting and also their experiences. I share the techniques I developed in my podcast, which tend to work well. For example, I advise simply writing and speaking everything out in clear sentence form, saying, according to Smith on page 60, quote, podcast rock, end quote, is more effective in audio form than, quote, podcast rock, open parentheses, Smith, 60, close parentheses, period, end quote. See, pretty awkward. Podcasts have already done some of this work for the students. Podcasts have already taken several print, TV, and radio genres and developed them in the podcast medium. Podcasters have taken sports shows from TV and radio, advice columns from newspapers, instructions from print, opinion pieces from print newspapers, even definitions of words from dictionaries. Any of these could be good examples to study for the assignment. In addition, students could study other media transitions, especially print to radio and TV, to see how things evolved. Early movies, with their book opening beginnings, can be compared to modern movies that do not need to situate the story in a book, literally. The early web newspapers and the evolution of print newspapers over time could also provide some insight, despite the fact that both are more typographic-based media. Students could also analyze different techniques the AP style manual suggests for print and broadcast journalism. These techniques include everything from different structures of information to different ways to write out numbers if writing a print story or a broadcast story. Rethinking established genres can certainly lead to interesting discussions, issues, and rhetorical choices, and possibly deepen one's understanding of the established genre and the new media they are trying for the genre. Exploring the podcast as a genre. Another assignment that may be fitting for advanced undergraduates and graduates is a project where they analyze podcasts as a genre. Much like Carolyn R. Miller and Don Shepard's text, Analyzing the Genre of a Weblog, students could investigate the Kairos audience, podcasters' motivations, features, and elements, and the rhetorical work of the podcasts. This could be done in general, podcasts as a whole, or students could examine particular types of podcasts, such as written word podcasts or couplecasts, and then explore whether the podcasts have subgenres or even several genres. Ken Hyland, in studying EFL-ESL students, argues on page 66 that, quote, teachers have to familiarize students with the rhetorical structures which are an important part of the meaning of texts, end quote. He suggests a detailed genre analysis can be helpful, especially something he calls a, quote, categories analysis, end quote, that illuminate the structure. While Hyland does the analysis of an argumentative essay in his article, it seems to better fit many of our constructivist and student-centered pedagogies to have the students analyze the genre or genres of podcasts. In addition, such work could respond to David Russell's article, Rethinking Genre in School and Society, and help students analyze how podcasts work within and among diverse communities, and prompt students to uncover the depth and breadth of a genre from structure to social practices, related activity systems, identity of the agents, construction of the activity, tools used, production, audiences, and the content. This, too, would respond to Stephen Witt's article on writing, in which he focuses on the textual, cognitive, and social, and possibly leading students to a better understanding of text, writing in various forms, and genre. This also is not a project I've tried in my own classes, but one I plan to incorporate into future classes. This project could closely relate to the new genres assignment I just discussed. Students could first investigate podcasts as a possible genre, and then develop a new approach in podcast form to an established non-podcast genre. While I have not taught either of these genre-specific assignments, I found that incorporating podcasts can help students towards a greater understanding of genre. In my fall 2010 class, students rated podcasting as a 4.2 of 5 as contributing to their understanding and application of genre. Of the various podcast components, the work where students created podcast tended to get higher scores towards understanding of genre than those where they listened to podcasts. Students did, however, find the lectures, discussions, and guest speaker helpful, giving this category a 4.1 of 5. The highest project was the Capstone project, which received a 4.3 of 5. This is not surprising, as students had to have a firm grasp on the genre of their project to be successful, and they also spent more time on this project than any other class project. Students also found the Week in Review contributed to their understanding, giving it the second highest project score, a 4 of 5. Since they were developing their own genre for the project, it is logical that it would contribute to their understanding of genre. Interestingly, it appears that the Capstone and Week in Review projects also contributed to other key writing and rhetorical skills. Students rated these two projects as contributing an average of 4.5 of 5 to their understanding and application of audience, purpose, context, ethos, pathos, logos, and tone. This suggests that projects that lead to improvements in the understanding of genre may also lead to improvements in the understanding of these 7 skills. Since these writing and rhetorical techniques are often a part of the study of genre, the possibility is both interesting and logical. However, my findings are in no way conclusive. Further study is needed to explore this potential relationship more fully. These assignments are just the beginning of assignments that we can develop to incorporate student-produced podcasts into our writing classrooms. There's no reason that students could not podcast anything that they can write for our classes, and we will likely develop additional assignments and genres for this media. And this concludes Episode 5, Podcast Assignments 3, Genre Assignments. Thanks for listening. Do check out Episodes 3 and 4 to learn more about podcast assignments. In 3, I present guidelines for incorporating podcasts and introduce 3 response assignments. In 4, I discuss media and message assignments. These are all, of course, part of the multimodal text, Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. Episode 6, Tips, Resources, and Conclusion. In this episode, I will first present a quick tip, then introduce the resources for incorporating podcasts, and then conclude the series. Without further ado, let us begin Episode 6, Tips, Resources, and Conclusion. Before I close this podcast article, I have one quick tip for teachers considering adding podcasts to their writing classrooms. The tip is simple. Consider asking a local podcaster to come in and speak to your class. I've done this each semester I've taught podcasting and has worked out very well. Students love the real podcaster and often end up quite excited about podcasting afterwards. Each semester I've received thanks for this immediately after the guest visited, in my end of semester evaluations, and in emails after the class period and at the end of the semester. This seems to make podcasts seem more real and legitimate to the students and less like yet another assignment. Many podcasters I have worked with or interviewed enjoy talking about podcasting to others. Also, most podcasters just seem to love talking, which makes sense since they podcast. Many podcasters are very enthusiastic and fully believe that everyone should podcast, and this enthusiasm is contagious. Since there are many podcasters out there, finding a local should be fairly easy. Check if your area has a podcamp or if there's a local podcast meetup, and considering asking presenters or those who attend the meetup. See if there are local media conferences or science fiction fantasy conventions, which often have a new media and podcasting track. If local businesses or organizations have podcasts, consider asking those podcasters. Many universities have non-class podcasts, for alumni, for instance, unless you could possibly even find podcasters at your own university. If you know a non-local podcaster, they may know some podcasters local to you. Or you could even ask a non-local podcaster if they'll be in your area and willing to speak. I highly recommend asking a podcaster or two to come in and talk to your writing class. You could even record it and put it online as a podcast for your students to refer back to. Chances are the podcaster may record it anyway to possibly podcast it themselves. We tend to do that. Resources. On the web text component of this multimodal text, I have several resources available to aid with the development of incorporating podcasts into your writing classroom, and I thought I'd briefly mention them here so you'll know to go check them out. I first have some recommended externally produced podcasts. These are podcasts I've successfully used in some ways in my classes. I also have music resources up. Since I've begun teaching and producing my own podcasts, I've developed a list of good Creative Commons and PodSafe music resources, and this can be helpful for your students or your own use. In fact, 3 of the sources that I list are ones I've used in my own podcasting, and I've had students use many of these sources themselves. I also include podcast tutorials. I have a list of podcasts, books, websites, and white papers on how to make a podcast. And some of these are shorter tutorials and some of these are longer tutorials. And finally, I have a list of recommended texts. I've broken this down into beginner texts and more advanced texts, depending on what your focus is for the class. If you're introducing students to podcasting, or if you are introducing them and then taking it further, maybe a graduate class, or maybe it is an undergraduate class where podcasting is a strong component. Some of these include peer-reviewed journal articles, too, which are particularly good for the graduate students. These resources that I have put up under the resource link on the WebText site should be helpful in getting you started. And also, I encourage you, if you find any other good resources, send them to me and I'll put them up. We all could use good sources for these types of resources. Conclusion. Podcasting is certainly a media we should consider teaching in our writing classrooms. While there are digital divide and technological literacy concerns, many of these can be overcome with thoughtful planning. And in some cases, podcasts may be more advantageous than the other options. Any of the main types of podcasts can be easily incorporated into our writing classrooms, from teacher and student-produced podcasts to externally produced podcasts. Many writing and composition teachers will likely want to include podcasts in richer and more meaningful ways than simply having students listen to others' podcasts. So I have included several possible podcast assignments for student-produced podcasts in episodes 3 through 5. Many of these assignments I have tried and love teaching in my own classes, such as The Week in Review, and I've included samples of the students' podcasts as examples in episodes 2 through 5 to illustrate some of the possibilities and what students have done. If you're considering incorporating podcasts, do not forget the quick tip I mentioned previously in episode 6. Invite a podcaster to speak in your class. As a podcaster, a researcher of podcasting, and a writing teacher, I highly recommend integrating podcasts into our writing classrooms, especially our digital writing classrooms, as I discuss in the companion piece, Rhetorical Roots and New Media Future. I have found that students who podcast reconsider the 5 rhetorical canons and other rhetorical concepts in new ways, and often end up not only creating rhetorically savvy podcasts, but also improving their writing skills in a variety of media. Podcasting is a great fit in our digital writing classrooms. Thanks for listening to Episode 6, Tips, Resources, and Conclusion in the Multimodal Text, Podcasting in a Writing Class? Considering the Possibilities. If you've not done so already, tune in to the earlier episodes where I cover everything from the advantages of podcasts to several possible assignments. This concludes the podcast article. Do check out the companion piece, Rhetorical Roots and Media Future, How Podcasting Fits into the Computer Surrounding Classroom, on Kairos, where I discuss how I have seen students apply and reconsider the 5 canons along with audience, purpose, context, and tone in new and ancient ways, and how this has impacted their other writing favorably. I also provide an extended definition of podcasting and a literature review of podcasting in educational areas. This multimodal text was published in Kairos, a journal of rhetoric, technology, and pedagogy. Please check out the full website on Kairos. Full reference information, transcript, and links are available in the web text and also in the lyrics field of the MP3 file. The music used in this podcast is 6 off Ghosts 1 by Nine Inch Nails, which is available under an attribution, non-commercial, share-alike, Creative Commons license. This text is licensed under a Creative Commons attribution, non-commercial, share-alike, 3.0 United States license. Please give me, Jennifer L. Bowie, and Kairos credit. Don't make any money off this, and share any derivative works. Thanks for listening.